Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response to midday for the 5th of Shvat. In my continuing attempts to make sure that we hear from many, many Meshivim, or as many as we can, and not default to those who I find most easily, right? There are some Meshivim whose Tshuvot come up most easily. I'm going to put together a couple of Tshuvot from ones we don't usually hear from, even though they'll be a little briefer, and then end with a slightly longer one. So these are from Rav Israel Hildesheimer, and then from Shut Achiez, Rav Chaim Elzer Grudzinski, who were greats of German Jewry in the late 1800s, early 1900s, Rav Israel Hildesheimer, and a little bit after that, Rav Chaim Elzer Grudzinski. And they have tshuvot on the dated to the 5th of Shvat. Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer is from a sefer called Shut Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer from the volume 1, the Or HaChaim section, Siman Yud Bet, dated the 5th of Shvat, Tuf Resh Vav, 1846. So I'm sorry, a little earlier than that, not just late 1800s, mid 1800s. Brachos. See, so the question was, Gemara in Brachos on Daf Vav Amid Bet says, when Hashem comes to a shul and doesn't find a minion there, doesn't find ten there, miyad hu koes, he gets angry, as it were. So the person asking, hold on, some of the question says, v'kashel havid. How mean we say there, when I and Aleph Amud Bet, right, so that's just a little bit earlier, the previous Amud, the Gemara says that when 10 come to Shul, to Davin, the Shechina precedes them to sort of greet them there. So if Hashem greets them, if Hashem beats them there and greets them, then that would mean that Hashem would get there before there's 10, and then theoretically, according to the next Gemara, it should be that Hashem should get angry. So what's going on? Is it that Hashem gets there first, or is it that... So it's unclear in the question to me whether the person means it literally, understood the Gemara literally, or he means whatever metaphorical meaning you give to it. It still puts it in the wrong order. Is it that Hashem anticipates the arrival of a minion and therefore comes to be there first to greet them? Or is it that the minion is supposed to get there and then Hashem comes, and if Hashem comes to shul at the time when the minion is supposed to be there, there's no minion, then Hashem gets angry, whatever those words mean. So the question can be true whether or not we're going to take this as being a literal claim about what happens with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then another part of the question was about a completely different Gemara. Gemara Daf Zayin Amud Bet says that Leah chose Reuven's name. This is Gemara Daf Zayin Amud Bet that said Reuven, which theoretically means see my son, but the Gemara also read it as see the difference between my son and Esav. That Esav, when he sold the Bechorah to Yaakov of his own free will, and yet when it turned out that Yaakov got the Bechorah, he hated Yaakov for it. So he sold the birthright and then still hated the fact that he had done the deal and hated Yaakov for having done the deal with him. As opposed to Reuven, she says, when Yosef's going to take the Bechorah, that's a long tradition that we can't get into right now, but basically that Yosef, in very many senses, becomes the Bechorah. He gets two sons who have tribes among the Jewish people, which is a double portion, and he in many ways becomes what Reuven theoretically could have been. Yehuda takes a part of that role as well. That's a whole different discussion too. But in any case, Reuven, for all that Yosef is going to replace him, as it were, or take many of his rights, Reuven nonetheless tried to save Yosef from the brothers. So the Gemara reads Leah's calling him Reuven as, see how great my son is compared, especially compared to Esav. The problem with that is that would suggest that she knew the future, which isn't a problem for the Gemara, except in the sense that there's a Gemara elsewhere in Megillah. It's not a problem for the Gemara, it's a problem for this man asking Rav Israel Hildesheimer the question. Gemara in Megillah and Daf Yud Dalet, Amud Aleph, lists the women who were Nevi'ot, who were prophetesses. So this man says, so why isn't Leah listed? She clearly knows what's going to happen. Doesn't that qualify her as a Nevi'ah, as a prophetess? So Rav Israel Hildesheimer answers, and he says to my good friend, all he says is my friend, so-and-so. And what's interesting is he puts in parentheses, Ta'alim ayin al hanachat divrei hakavod. He says, please ignore the fact, or don't be upset that I'm not going to give you this whole long list of honorifics, as is very common in tshuvot, and as I always skip when I'm presenting them, because I just don't want to take the time out of it. But the truth is that many, many tshuvot, depending on the meshiva, depending on the situation, they can go on at great length with all the different kinds of honors and honorifics they want to give the person. Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer somebody says, please forgive me, I'm not doing any of that because I don't have enough time. And he says, and you don't do it in the future as well. Meaning the man had apparently written him a flowery opening. Rav Israel Hildesheimer was not going to spend his time on that. He said, I don't have the time to do that. And forgive me, it doesn't mean I don't respect you. And you feel free not to do it to me as well. Interesting comment on tshuvot and on the rabbinic writing style and how we choose or don't choose to be part of that. So he says, I got your letter. And then I went over, he says, Lamadati emesh kol hadvarim asher katavta. I went over and I learned the sugyot again, meaning I'm not answering you quickly. It's not like you ask me a question and here's the answer. It's I reviewed everything to make sure that I could think of or could know the right answer. And now I'm going to answer them one by one. But he says, I'm going to answer it briefly, and then it's going to be up to you to obviously understand and know what I'm saying. So this is something to think about, is how briefly we answer things, and when we get things right, when we get things wrong. I was just reading, recently reviewing another tshuva, I think that we'll see together in a couple of weeks, where the meshiv is upset because somebody accuses him of making a mistake, and he says, it's because I wrote briefly, assuming you'd figure out what I meant, and then you didn't. So that can happen too. But in any case, he's writing the answer. First answer is, he says, if you look carefully, he thinks you see in the Gemara that when the Gemara says that the Hashem comes first, when there are 10 who gather, it's not about davening, it's about she'oskin ba'Torah. It's that they're involved in Torah study. So therefore, you could just say, v'zehu yoter mitfilah, and that's more important than davening. So in other words, the first possible answer is, if you look carefully in the Gemara, in his reading of it, says, when 10 get together to study Torah, the Hashem comes first to greet them on their arrival. But when they're getting there for tefillah, they're supposed to come first, and if they don't get there on time, and Hashem comes and they're not there, then Hashem gets angry. And he says, I don't have time to expand upon that. Now, when I look it up in our Gemaras, so the question, remember, was from Vav Amid Bet in Brachos, was that when Hashem comes and there's no minyan, Hashem gets angry. And in previous Amud, on Amud Aleph of Daf Vav, page 6, so 6a, it says 10, the Shechina comes first. So when I look at, and then on 7b was the question about Leah. So when I look at Brachos 6a to look it up to be sure, I see Amar Rav Ada, Amar Rav Yitzchak, it's talking about various issues. It says, Minayin the Asarash. How do you know that 10 who are davening, the divine presence with them? Hashem is there when there's an Eda. And then it goes on, it says, badin. And how do you know that when there are 10 who are sitting and judgment? So that to me sounds like the 10 is a question of davening. And then 3 was judging, and 2 was studying Torah together. And then, so I'm not sure, either he had a different version of the Gemara, or he thought that from the fact that the Gemara went on to talk about 3 sitting in judgment and 2 studying Torah, he assumed that that meant that even though it said mitpaladin about the 10, it didn't really mean mitpaladin as in davening together, it meant that they were doing something valuable together. But I'm not sure where he's getting that from. Now the Gemara does go on there to say, in the continuation of that Gemara, that, and how do you know, once, because the Gemara went all the way down to 1 and said, if the one person there, Hashem comes to join him. So the Gemara says, and if 1 is good enough, then GD tells me the 2, right? If 1 brings Hashem, then why 2? So it says, it gives an answer. And that says, if 2 is enough, then what about 3? And it gives an answer. That says, if 3, then what about 10? Then why do you need 10? If Hashem is even there when 3 are judging, then why tell me about 10? So the Gemara says, Asara kadma shechina va'atya. With 10, the Shechina comes first. 3, until they sit down to have judgment together. So maybe Rabbi Zilus Hildesheimer was thought, or his understanding was, that if the Gemara treats them all as the same, right? The Gemara theoretically could have just said, well, for 3 it's when they judge, and for 10 it's when they daven. So that's a whole different thing. So you might have thought that judging, the act of having a court create judgment, is the kind of thing that brings Hashem, but not necessarily the act of 10 who come to pray together. And there, so the Gemara could have said that. So it could be that by virtue of the fact that it doesn't say that, Rizul Hildesheimer assumed that it must have meant that they were studying Torah as well. But I'm not sure. Another answer he says is, even if it's true that with 10 davening, with 10 praying, the Hashem is supposed to come first, I could say that the anger when Hashem comes and they're not there is that he couldn't have come first and greeted and found and then had a minion come, meaning it's not that Hashem comes and there's no minion there yet, meaning let's suppose I know of a shuls where, let's say, if they call mincha for 4:30 in the afternoon, they might not get a minion until 4:35, and I know people who get very upset about that. So Rav Zilzheimer is saying maybe the Gemara might sound like if Hashem gets there at 4:29 and there's not a minion there yet, Hashem gets upset. So, but even though they get the minion there at 4:35, so Rav Zilzheimer is suggesting maybe it's not true. Maybe the Gemara doesn't mean if Hashem comes there and the minion is not yet there. It's not a function of that Hashem got there first that makes Hashem angry according to this Gemara. It's a function of Hashem gets there there and there's not going to be a minyan there. It's not that Hashem got there first, that Hashem gets there and there won't be a minyan, so Hashem will not be able to have greeted the minyan. Maybe that's the reason for the anger, according to that Gemara, and then that changes the whole thing, and then both Gemaras assume and agree that Hashem is anticipating us there, as it were. And the only question was, one Gemara said that Hashem anticipates us as, you know, as a celebration of the fact that we're coming together, and the other Gemara said Hashem comes together in comes there in anticipation of the fact that we should be there, and then a minyan doesn't show up, so that creates anger in Hashem. I think it's a very interesting reading. It also makes the Gemara sort of less. I think it solves a couple of other problems in the Gemara. For example, being the whole question, what does it mean that Hashem comes someplace? Since Hashem is everywhere, what does it mean Hashem comes there? In particular, so you say that it comes there, it's sort of it doesn't mean anything about Hashem being there or not being there more. It means that Hashem sort of puts himself, as it were, there to partake of something. So then the before or after is less important because Hashem is always there. It's that Hashem has come there in some special kind of a way to anticipate being part of something, as it were. And if it becomes impossible, that's the anger that the Gemara was talking about. He also throws out, because another possibility you might have suggested that I think maybe the letter writer suggests that we don't have in front of us, but he just said, I also thought about the fact that maybe you could say, well, Hashem comes before they daven, but after they get together. So it could be they get together, then Hashem joins them, and then, but Hashem's still there before they daven. He says, but you could always say that then, because Hashem would always come after one or two have gathered, and therefore that he doesn't think that's the answer. But he ends up thinking that the right answer is that when it says Hashem anticipates their coming, it comes before them, that's when they're gathering to learn, not to daven, which we've already discussed. Then there's a note in the Bar Ilan, in the, you know, whatever edition of Rav Yisrael Hildesheimer's responsa that they included in the Bar Ilan responsa project. There's a note there. Look at an answer to this question that was given by the Rashbah. So this is not dated to the 5th of Shvat, but it comes up. So we have a chance to see the Rashbah as well. So the Rashbah in a tshuva was asked about this. He says, first he says, Ein mishivin min ha-hagadah. We don't ask such questions when it comes to Agadah, which I think is a really interesting point, and is not the tradition that became very prevalent later on in halakhic literature. Meaning the Rashbah is saying, if I have a comment even on 6b, 6a, and another comment on 6b, now in this case, there are different people saying it, so that could even help the Rashbah even more, but he says, if I have two different comments on Haggadot and they seem to contradict, I don't have to worry about that. That's his first comment, in Rishivin min ha-Haggadah, because... And I think what he means is, he doesn't explain further, but I think what he means is that when I make an agada comment, especially if I don't think that it's meant literally, right? We don't literally think that Hashem comes. At most we can, because Hashem is everywhere. At most we can mean there's some sense in which Hashem's presence can be more and less in certain places at certain times, right? That we, in some sense, bring Hashem in the world more, let's say, when we do mitzvot. So Hashem is more in the world rather than less. Whatever those more and less mean, they clearly don't mean literally more and less. They mean something. But whatever that something is, so you can say that here as well, right? Hashem, in some sense, is always in shul, but Hashem comes to that shul more to anticipate a minyan coming, or comes to join a group of 10 more after they've gathered. So whatever those mores mean, and however those work, they don't have to contradict each other in any way, because it's all metaphorical. So you don't ask such questions, and we don't deal with such things. That's one possibility. It says an important possibility. Like I said, I think there are many, many, especially Ashkenazic, but not only, those who deal with issues in Haggadot and try to put them all together, try to figure them out. And the Rashbah here seems to just say, well, I don't think you have to do all of this. You know, there's a famous book that I remember one of my teachers, Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, mentioned and stimulated me to try a couple of times to get through, and I really had a very hard time, because the book is called Parashat Drachim. It's a very impressive book that shows a lot of bikkut and a lot of good thought and a lot of well thought out issues, but he tries to put together different agadic comments and how different Rishonim dealt with those Agadah comments to figure out issues in Agadah. So one famous example, and the one that I tried to get through many different times and have worked on several different times, and not succeeded to say that I know this issue at all, is the question of whether we treat the Avot, we treat the Jewish people before the giving of the Torah, do we treat them as full Jews, both hakil lachmir, to be lenient about them and to be, as well as to be strict with them, or do we not think of them as Jews? We think of them as non-Jews who were only obligated to keep the Noahide laws and then maybe chose to. There are Gemara out, there are Haggadot to talk about the fact that they did keep the Torah. Were they choosing to keep the Torah voluntarily? And how does that affect various issues in the history of that time and in the Agadot of that time. So the Parshas Drachim works very hard, and others have picked up the issue and spoken about it, and there are many other places that I've seen also. You know, this discussion comes up, whatever halachic issue comes up, and the Ramban discusses sometimes, for example, the Ramban discusses famously why it was that Yaakov was allowed to marry two wives, and his answer, the halacha in the Torah is you can't marry two sisters. So if you assume that Avraham Avinu kept the whole Torah, as the Gemara says, and that therefore his descendants tended to keep the whole Torah, you know, and then I guess the Jews lost it in Mitzrayim, but they were keeping the whole Torah. Then how did Yaakov marry two sisters? The Ramban's answer is, and a very famous answer because it's so striking, the Ramban's answer is that Yaakov Avinu was outside of Israel, and outside of Israel, the Torah doesn't apply the same way. Now, today it applies, the Torah law applies to Jews outside of Israel. The Ramban elsewhere has said that he thinks that Torah law outside of Israel is sort of practice for when you get back to Israel at a Torah level. And then since Yaakov Avinu was before the giving of the Torah, he can marry the two sisters of Israel. Complicated issues. The Rajabai is telling us that all of those questions don't really have to be dealt with in terms of how they fit all together. You don't have to build one coherent picture together because it's just Haggadah. That's one answer. But then he gives another answer. So as soon as he gives another answer, you see whether he would prefer that as much of it as you can put together, because the more that it hangs together, the more that it is. That's a fascinating halakhic question that comes up not only in Haggadah, in Agadot, but comes with halacha as well, right? One of the things that Tosafot often assume is that different places in the Gemara should, as much as possible, fit with each other. Whereas the Rambam, I think, for example, is much more likely to assume that one discussion of a topic is the authoritative one in the Gemara, and therefore we cannot pay attention to the other ones. And that question of how much do we allow a corpus of literature to be seen as one unit where it all has to fit together, and where unless it's obviously matter of dispute, we try to fit it with each other, or where we assume there are different strands, and we pick the strand that we follow in practice and for halacha purposes and for Jewish thought purposes, those are very different approaches that come up. And here's one place where it comes up. In this Rashba that we brought up, let's just remember, we brought it up to answer a question that Rabbi Zil Hildesheimer answered a different way. Rabbi Zil Hildesheimer's answer was that they were basically different issues, because one was talking about the study of Torah and was talking about davening, so therefore you didn't have to worry about them together. The Rashba's first answer was, you don't have to worry about it because they're matters of Haggadah. And then he says another explanation would be that Tikadim, that Hashem comes before them, doesn't mean before. It means as they're arriving. And it's not that Hashem waits until the ten come, and then they come and they sit down, and then he waits. It's that as immediately with their coming, Hashem comes as well, so which is, of course, possible for Hashem, which solves some issues such as, you know, how can Hashem be sure that they're coming if there's free will? You know, maybe they think they're coming and something's going to happen, or they're going to decide not to, and whatever. It answers a bunch of issues, although it has to then take the Gemara in that sense less literally, because literally it means Hashem comes first. Tikadei means Hashem gets there first. So that's the Rashba's answer to that question. And then when it comes to the Leah question, Rabbi Zil Hildesheimer, we're back in the original tshuva that we were picking up. Rabbi Zil Hildesheimer says, when it comes to the Leah question, he thinks that when the Gemara in Megillah lists women who were Nevi'ot, who were prophetesses, that's where they were clearly Nevi'ot. They were clearly considered prophetesses in the Torah explicitly. So Sarah is called Yiska elsewhere in the Torah, and the Gemara explains Yiska means Shesachta Beruach HaKodesh, that she was sort of soaked in the divine spirit. So that makes clear that she was an Nevi'ah. And Esther was clothed in Ruach HaKodesh, because she has a couple of times that she had Nevuot. So in other words, not literally in the text that we know that she has Nevuot, but the Gemara can point to Psukim that designate her as a Nevi'ah in some way. So Esther was Lavsha, you know, was clothed in Malchut, and the Gemara understands that to mean that she was clothed in predictions of Hashem. Abigail had one prophecy that the Gemara understands, Abigail, when she's speaking to David about what's going to happen, so she has one thing, one set of words that the Gemara understands to be a prophecy. So in all those cases, it's much more explicit prophecies, is what results all the time. But Leah, it's not quite a prophecy. It's more of a remes. Right? She says Reuven, but she doesn't say even in Reuven. She says, "See what a great son I have." So even the Gemara's reading of Reuven was, "My son is so great because his character is going to be such that he's going to handle the future differently than his uncle Esav handled his situation of losing out on his birthright to somebody else." It's not quite exactly a prophecy. So that's what he That's the basic answer Rabbi Zilhel Zimmer gives. Again, it's an agadic issue, so we don't have to deal with it too much, but you're right, because you could say the Gemara and Megillah and the Gemara and the Gemara and Bracha just were talking about different situations for different issues, and the lay doesn't count as a prophet as for whatever the situation was in the Gemara and Megillah, but that is the answer of Rabbi Zilhel Zimmer. So, Rabbi Zilhel Zimmer, 1846, 5th of Shvat, gives us a couple of insights into some Gemaras and Brachot. One is the question of whether Hashem comes first or later to those who are davening. It sounds like Hashem comes first before Minyan for davening, and then it also sounds like Hashem joins a minyan once it happens. Rizal's answer is that one was talking about davening and one was talking about Torah learning. That was the basic answer. We saw Rashba in that context with a couple of answers. And then we had the question of Leah and whether she was a Nevi'ah or not. And the answer was that one Gemara seems to imply that she sort of anticipated the future, but not in a way that qualifies quite as prophecy. That is Rizal Hildes timer. Now we can move on to Shut Achiezer Chela Gimel Simon Ayin Tet, a tshuva of Chaim Ozer Grudzinski from the third volume of his response, chapter or number 79, and this the whole tshuva is tshuvot ksarot b'inyanim shanim. It's a sort of a, like we today are putting together a couple of different short responses. That's what this chapter in Achiezer was as well, and it's from the 5th of Shvat of Tuf Ayin Reish Beit, which was 1912. And the question that we're dealing with here is if we are allowed to change the Mizrach wall, meaning we're supposed to daven to the east, and those of us who live to the west of Israel are supposed to daven to the east because we're supposed to focus in our prayers towards Yerushalayim. And so the certain shul that was writing to Rav Israel Hilsheimer had a problem because the architect had told them that if they make the Mizrach wall, the east wall, which would have the Aron Kodesh to it, it would have the important people sitting on it, and they would have windows in it, which was, Gemara says that you should have windows to the east. So he says there could be a time that people there on that property will build buildings that will shut out the light. We'll close off the light to the Mizrach wall, and you'll have the light, you'll have a problem, it'll be a whole problem for the shul building. And therefore, he said it's much smarter, the architect said to them, it's much smarter to build all of that stuff, the aron that you're going to face while you're davening, and the windows that you're going to have, build it towards the north, because if you build it towards the north, there's whatever the property rights were, whatever the situation was, there's less of a chance, or maybe no chance, that there somebody would be able to build and block off your light. So Chaim Ozer says, the answer is that we have a halacha, that we build our shuls to the extent possible, right? There's a situation where it's impossible, but to the extent possible, we build our shuls facing to the east. And it's true that having windows on the east side is a Gemara in Brachos as well. And it's passing in the Torah Shulchan Aruch and Simon Tzadi, and you have all sorts of other sources that say that's an important thing. The Rashash in Brachos there wonders there was an important base medrash in Vilna apparently that didn't have walls in the east. So it's clear the halacha you have to have walls in the east. And the Rambam Pe'er Hador, which is quoted by the Kesef Mishnah, said that might only be for an individual. So the man writing the letter, Shem Chaim Ozer, says, but the poskim don't mention that, but it would have been a good out for me, because they could have said that. We don't need windows to the east. We could have made our windows to the north and not built it towards the east and not had a problem. So the pre-begotten, where's that issue? A whole discussion there, right? It's possible, Shem Chaim Ozer, that the Shulchan Aruch was careful in his language. Because the Shulchan Aruch says in Simon Tzadi, Seif Dalet, is, Tzarech liftoch pitachim, you have to open doors, O Chalonot, Neged Yerushalayim, Kedei Hitpalel Kenegdan. You want to have openings toward Yerushalayim so you can pray in that direction, and it's good that there should be 12 of them, right, to sort of symbolize or correspond to the 12 tribes. But Bedid Tzarich Liftoach, he doesn't mention a Beit HaMidrash because you don't necessarily need it, maybe. And it's only a Minog, and he finished with, and it's good that B'yeh Beit HaKnesset. So all that discussion aside, Chaim Ozer says, but if you're building a shul now and you have a chance to make windows to the east, then do it. And we don't have to worry that in the future something will happen. She'afil oram. And also, he says, there's no definition in Chazal about how much light has to come through the windows in order for it to be okay. In other words, now, I don't know the historical situation with what was going on with that shul. If the architect was telling them, listen, I know there are people who have plans already to build, or he just knew it was an open lot that was owned by somebody and said they're likely to build. But Chaim Ozer makes two comments that I think are relevant, interesting. Comment number one is, we don't know the future, so if in right now it works out well, we should build it well. So that's the kind of thing that I think is always interesting to think about, is when do we have to worry about the future? What futures do we worry about? What futures don't we worry about? You know, how much are we allowed to just say, well, I'm doing what's right for right now, and I don't have to think about how it's going to work out in the future? And how much do we have to say to ourselves, no, you got to plan for the future as well? And that's an issue that comes up in lots and lots and lots of places. Here would be one of them. Chaim was saying, I think right now, if the shul could be built well, and you put it on the Mizrach wall, since the Mizrach wall is supposed to be to the Mizrach, to the east, you should just build it out. But then, the second comment is more directly related to this question, to this particular issue, not to a general question. He says, Chazal didn't tell you how much light has to come through the windows. I would throw in, just to think about it, that our windows today probably get it in lots more light than many of the windows they used to have in their time, unless they were completely fully open. So in other words, he's saying, well, they're not going to build right up to your windows. They're going to build maybe to the property line. That'll mean there'll be a lot less light coming in, but there'll still be windows, and they'll have light coming in. So does Chazal care that there be light to the east when they had those windows? They just get the windows to be open so that people say they did not have a blank wall, and they understood they're supposed to be looking out to and thinking of Yerushalayim. Right, that's already where Chaim Moser goes on to say, right? If they didn't care about the light, it's not a question of you should have light in that direction. It's a question of you should be thinking about Yerushalayim. Then, if the windows are open or there's an opening focusing us on Yerushalayim, there's that too. Even if there's another building there, and so what if there's not so much light? That is true. The Tamir Ben Yonah there, in his commentary on Brachot, says that the question is, no, that if you see the light, it will help you settle your mind. You'll be able to have a better focus on your davening. So according to that, there would be no need to have the windows be particularly to the east, and therefore you could build to the north and other windows to the north. But that's not enough room, he says, to say that we can change from building to the east and changing it to the north, because that's one commentary on why you need the windows, and would there are other reasons that we want to pray to the east than we tend to pray to the east, and those are other Paskin halachot, and therefore there's no permissibility. It says you have to put the aron in the kotel hamizrach, in the wet, in the east, as is the custom in old Futsot Yisrael, and that is the halacha that he paskin. So it turns out that I'm at the 26 and something minute mark, and I have another tshuva, but that other tshuva I'm not going to be able to do at any great length, so I often go over time, so maybe I'll extremely briefly mention that Shubitzel HaChochma, which is Rebetzel Stern, was asked about a custom that a woman who gave birth, that the first time she would go out of the house would be go to shul to hear a baruch, and that sometimes they would arrange a mariv in her house so she could hear a baruch a couple days later. This harkens back to a time when women were sort of laid up at home for long periods of time after birth. That's not any more the practice today, but it's a tshuva that I'm not going to get into, but it's just a reminder of the different kinds of customs that used to be among people. And here the basic idea was that after such a momentous event as having birth, which just like other momentous events in her life, is supposed to be also a religious event, that the first time she leaves the house and she's sort of thanking Hashem for having come through it. Okay, there were certainly times, even today, but time has gone by when childbirth was dangerous and very painful and very problematic, could be very problematic for people. A successful childbirth, no problem, something to be celebrated greatly, and therefore to include it as a religious event. So the specifics we'll leave for another time, but that was one more tshuva that we might have gotten to for the 5th of Shvat, response a day. Have a great day.